A soldier survives 10 years of brutal warfare, only to spend another decade trying to get home. His wife fends off over 100 aggressive suitors. His son grows from infant to man without ever knowing his father's face. When they finally reunite, the homecoming isn't tender, it's drenched in blood. This is Homer's Odyssey, an ancient epic that understands something we're still grappling with today. The journey home can be harder than the war itself. For nearly 3,000 years, this story has captivated audiences, from ancient Greeks gathered around firelight to modern filmmakers like the Coen brothers reimagining it as O Brother, Where Art Thou? Why does a Bronze Age poem about gods and monsters still matter? Because beneath the mythological veneer lies a profoundly human story about identity, belonging, and the cost of trying to reclaim what we've lost. After Troy's fall, most Greeks sail home within weeks. Odysseus takes 10 years. His journey becomes a catalog of humanity's greatest temptations and fears. Greed turns victory into disaster when his fleet raids the Cyclones. On the Lotus Eater's Island, a single taste makes men forget home entirely. Odysseus drags his weeping crew back to the ships. The danger isn't always monsters. Sometimes it's the seductive promise of forgetting your pain. But monsters do come. The Cyclops Polyphemus traps Odysseus and 12 men in his cave, eating them two at a time. Odysseus gets the giant drunk, claims his name is Nobody, then drives a heated stake through his eye. When other Cyclops hear, "Nobody is killing me," they wander off confused. The survivors escape clinging to sheep's undersides. It's brilliant, until pride ruins everything. Sailing away, Odysseus shouts his real name, letting Polyphemus call upon his father Poseidon to curse the journey, transforming a difficult voyage into a decade-long nightmare. The subsequent adventures read like a fever dream. Circe transforms his men into pigs. He sails to the underworld to consult a dead prophet. He navigates between Scylla, a six-headed monster, and Charybdis, a ship-swallowing whirlpool. When his starving crew slaughters the sun god's sacred cattle, Zeus destroys the ship. Odysseus alone survives. Then comes 7 years imprisoned on Calypso's island. She offers immortality, eternal youth, divine status, everything mortals dream of. He refuses. He would rather die as a mortal in Ithaca than live forever anywhere else. Home isn't just a place, it's the entirety of what makes him human. In Homer's world, gods aren't distant moral authorities. They're powerful beings with personal agendas, playing with human lives like chess pieces. Athena champions Odysseus because they share intelligence and cunning. She lobbies Zeus for his release, disguises him as a beggar, and helps plan the suitors' massacre. Poseidon pursues an obsessive vendetta over his blinded son, spending years conjuring storms. Zeus maintains cosmic order, managing competing divine interests. This framework creates a world where success requires both personal excellence and divine favor. Yet Odysseus's choices matter enormously. Divine intervention amplifies consequences, but doesn't erase his agency. While Odysseus battles monsters, Penelope fights her own war at home, one requiring equal cunning but different weapons. For 20 years, she holds off 108 suitors demanding she remarry. Her most famous tactic? Promising to choose after completing a burial shroud for Laertes, then secretly unraveling each night's weaving for 3 years until a servant exposes her. Notice the parallel. Odysseus crafts lies and disguises, Penelope weaves and unweaves. They're perfectly matched in intelligence. The poem contrasts her with other women to highlight different forms of power. Circe and Calypso wield supernatural abilities yet can't keep Odysseus. Penelope exercises agency within severe constraints. Unable to physically expel suitors or claim political authority, she deploys intelligence and strategic ambiguity. Her final test of the marriage bed, built around a living olive tree only they know about, demonstrates her power lies in intimate knowledge rather than public authority. The poem opens not with Odysseus, but his son Telemachus, about 20 but unable to control the suitors devouring his inheritance. Athena, disguised as Mentor, encourages him to seek news of his father, his first political act. His voyage to visit Nestor and Menelaus serves multiple purposes: seeking information, entering the wider world, learning kingship. By poem's end, he stands beside his father in battle, completing the journey from boy to warrior. Yet his disturbing insistence on hanging disloyal slave women rather than granting a quick death raises questions about what kind of man he's become. In a world without hotels or police, hospitality, Xenia, provided essential structure. Welcome travelers, provide food and shelter before asking questions, create reciprocal bonds. When Telemachus visits Nestor and Menelaus, both kings welcome him immediately, then inquire about his purpose, honoring Zeus Xenios, protector of guests. The suitors invert Xenia completely. As uninvited guests, overstaying for years, they consume Telemachus's inheritance and plot murder. When disguised Odysseus arrives as a beggar, Antinous hurls a footstool, violations justifying their slaughter. Polyphemus commits the ultimate violation. Declaring Cyclopes do not care about Zeus, he eats his guests rather than feeding them. "My name is nobody," Odysseus tells Polyphemus, a lie becoming truth when the Cyclops screams, "Nobody is killing me." The poem calls him Polytropos, many-turning, Polymetis, of many counsels, Polymechanos, resourceful. Unlike heroes defined by single qualities, Odysseus contains multitudes: warrior and trickster, husband and adulterer, king and beggar. When Penelope orders servants to move their bed, Odysseus reveals it cannot move. He built it around a living olive tree, a secret known only to them. Identity is neither entirely fixed nor completely fluid. Odysseus remains fundamentally himself despite many disguises, yet his experiences transform him from the warrior who left for Troy into the more complex man who returns. Odysseus finally reaches Ithaca, but physical arrival doesn't mean he's home. His palace has been invaded, his authority usurped, his family besieged. Reclaiming what's his requires violence, the slaughter of 108 suitors and 12 slave women that raises uncomfortable questions about justice, revenge, and restoration's price. The suitors clearly deserve punishment. They violated hospitality, consumed Callimachus's inheritance, abused the household, and plotted murder. Yet Odysseus's revenge killing, every single one without mercy, exceeds what many consider proportionate. He and Telemachus, aided by two loyal servants, massacre the suitors with arrows, swords, then spears. The palace floor runs with blood. Disloyal slave women are forced to clean the carnage before being hanged. This violence isn't presented as purely heroic. Eupithes, father of slain suitor Antinous, offers a devastating critique. Odysseus has repeatedly led young men to their deaths, first at Troy and now in his own hall. The poem doesn't refute this charge. Much of what we know about Odysseus's adventures comes from his potentially self-serving account to the Phaeacians. When he weeps at songs about the Trojan War, a simile compares his tears to those of a widow facing slavery after her husband's death in battle. Empathy for suffering he's caused, or manipulation? Even loyal supporters acknowledge his problematic nature. The swineherd Eumaeus remarks that Odysseus was devious even when he was a child. Athena teases him about habitual lying. The qualities that made him successful in war, cunning, ruthlessness, pride, don't easily translate to peacetime leadership. The extended ending reinforces this ambiguity. Rather than concluding with the reunion, the poem continues through several potential endings: the suitors' ghosts traveling to the underworld, Odysseus meeting his father Laertes, and finally a battle with the suitors' families that Athena abruptly halts. True reconciliation requires supernatural force rather than human resolution. According to the prophet Tiresias, Odysseus must undertake one final journey inland, carrying an oar until someone mistakes it for a winnowing fan. Only then can he hope for peaceful death. This unfinished quest suggests homecoming isn't a single event, but an ongoing process, one that may never fully resolve the tensions between who he was, who he became, and who he needs to be now. 3,000 years later, we still read about a man trying to get home because we recognize something true in his struggle. Homecoming, whether from war, displacement, trauma, or time, is never as simple as walking through the door. The place changes, you change, the people who waited change. Sometimes the hardest battles happen after the fighting stops. The poem's refusal to provide neat closure mirrors life's complexity. We all carry multiple identities, navigate competing obligations, and struggle to return to ourselves after transformative experiences. Like Odysseus, we discover that the journey home is never really finished. It's a process we engage with every day, in every choice about who we are and what we owe to those we love. The ancient poem endures because it understands that the Odyssey isn't just his story, it's everyone's.